You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. Our friend and musician Jack Brace has created what he calls a holiday jukebox from hell. These are his picks for the absolute worst holiday songs of all time. So we're challenging you to do the opposite. What holiday songs do you absolutely adore?
I just wanted to say that my favorite Christmas song now is O Holy Night, and that's ever since Josh Groban sang it.
Send us your best holiday song, the one that you just can't live without every holiday season. 8778-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
You know, during the holidays, you think not only about music, but about food. There's nothing that defines a nation more than its practices in eating and cooking and in cultivating the kinds of foods that go on the plate. And Barack Obama, our brand new president, ran on a platform of change. And when he was elected, a bunch of very notorious and famous foodies in the United States, chefs and owners of restaurants and people who write about food and food practices in the United States, got together to suggest some changes in the way America puts its food on its plate, changes from dietary practices all the way to agricultural strategies. And Kim Severson of the New York Times writes about what the foodies want from this new administration with the sort of foodie perspective. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here.
From Steamboat Springs, Colorado. I'm actually pretty jealous of where you are this holiday season.
A lot of nice snow out here, let me tell you that. It's a Christmas miracle.
Well, how do you assess what it is, first of all, that foodies might want from a new administration and what is likely to change in the very broad, and I guess it's fair to say, cultural set of practices that constitute how Americans approach, consume, and cultivate food?
Well, the foodinistas or the food progressives, I'm not sure any term but foodies, I guess, is a good one for me. But they started immediately. Ruth Reichel, who's the editor of Gourmet, Alice Waters, who's a very famous restaurateur from California, and Danny Meyer, who's a restaurant mogul in New York City, all got together immediately after Obama was elected and wrote him a letter offering to be his kitchen cabinet and help him select a White House chef who would have sustainable ethic, who would cook local food, and who could really set the tone. So this idea that what the president eats can affect how we eat is a pretty strong one. Some more serious efforts came up. There were lobbying for who he should choose for agriculture secretary. This has gone from slightly ridiculous, which was to nominate Michael Pollan, who has repeatedly said that perhaps he wouldn't be the best person to run a $97 billion budget.
Food stamps from Michael Pollan might be
right,
a little tough
I can't really imagine what that meeting would be like, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then there's some more serious efforts. There's a group of people who started with Paul Willis, who's a kind of a famous pig farmer, started selling his pork through Nyman Ranch and now sells a lot of his pork to Chipotle, and a couple other folks in Iowa who decided they would put forth a list of people they thought should be Secretary of Agriculture. Now, as we know, last week, their wishes did not come true.
So the early indications are not good for this change in practices.
It's interesting. People are like, well, his family, Michelle Obama talked about how she doesn't like high fructose corn syrup and she likes to eat organic. And, he's got Rahm Emanuel, who's his chief of staff, belongs to a community-supported agriculture program through a synagogue. And there's all these indications that Obama is the guy, the foodie guy. He's quoted Michael Pollan in interviews. But his first choice was very much a centrist choice. Tom Vilsack, who was likes biotechnology. He likes ethanol. He certainly works with big farm interests, with big agriculture. So there was a sense of, give Obama a chance. This is a centrist. And then some people just that was it. It was, the dream is dead.
Well, what about some high-profile symbolic things, such as maybe a vegetable garden on the White House lawn? Or Alice Waters, of course, has a famous food cultivation program in high schools in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm,
maybe
mm-hmm.
That would be a part of Obama's educational program.
You know, it would be really easy if he took, and there's a campaign out there, too, this is another part of the thing, to turn one or two of the 17 acres of White House garden into an organic vegetable garden, to have the first garden, if you will. It would be terrific. I think it would go a long way to saying this is an important part of our culture. How we eat food is important. He could certainly direct the education department to start to think about incorporating gardening and farming into curriculum and to see if somehow in the school food program, which is now under USDA, if there could be a local initiative. So school districts could, say, maybe get a break if they buy a certain percentage of their food locally. There's a lot that he could do.
I guess the sense is that the opportunity is great, because certain symbolic gestures may actually trickle down in a big way.
I think it's true. It's always the one small thing, you know, that can make big change, especially in this country, and especially, I think, when people are really hungry for, well, I shouldn't say it's a terrible pun, but are looking for a way to change what they eat. And if you look at the rise in farmers markets over the last 4 or 5 years, after the last decade, you know, there are 4,000 or 5,000 farmers markets that weren't in existence 10, 20 years ago. People obviously are interested in changing how they eat. And so if the president says, we're going to try to eat mostly, I want a chef who cooks mostly organic in my kitchen, we're going to feature local American food at every state dinner, would go a long way, I think.
Do you think, Kim, that these individuals would support explicit subsidies for organic food to bring the price down, to maybe bring them more in line with non-organic alternatives?
Well, I think people are looking at that. There's nothing more complex. Well, I'm sure there are a few things more complex, but the way farm subsidies and the way agricultural subsidies work in this country are very difficult, and the way that the government ties in inexpensive food with many of its feeding programs is going to be a hard one to unravel. So, you know, the government subsidizes certain kinds of agriculture to get a certain amount of production. There's extra food. That food goes into the schools as a commodity program. Well, that food is not always not necessarily the healthiest food. So there'd be a subsidy so that organic foods were less expensive, Bruce, possibly. I think you could.
The symbolism is the key here. Maybe a gesture in, you know, one class of foods
right.
in
the local
schools.
Procurement, you know, that school districts that procure their food locally will get a certain break. That could go a long way.
All right.
The
symbolic versus the policy. All the foodies are going to be paying attention as they, you know, contemplate their holiday dinners. Kim Severson, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, great to be here, and you guys have a good rest of the week.
Well, we can't compare to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, where Kim Severson joined us. She's a reporter for the New York Times, our partner.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.